There's a few people behind you.
Oh, thank you very much. These blessings and bounties you speak of seem coming from your throat to have the female quality that you're describing. Mm-hmm. And my question is, how is it, in your understanding, that for so long the male vision of God has dominated our cultures?
I understand it more that when the patriarch stepped forward, this is when the beginning of the feminine, the eternal feminine, started to be marginalized. And I do feel that at the time when all of this was going on, it was necessary because it brought reason, logic. We were able to unfold the truth in a bit different kind of way. The concept of, you know, perfection was brought to our attention. So there were many things. And when you travel in a certain kind of way, you know, especially through truth, you know, there are some good aspects about the male being dominant in that part of the journey. But I'm not sure that she was, you know, this aspect of love that I'm speaking about that has more insight and intuition and this quality of love that can transform, form, and reform. I don't think it was supposed to be pushed so far back as it was. Because for a long time, the particular transmission that, you know, for the last couple of thousand years that was coming, it was coming in that kind of way. It had a particular quality to it. But I don't think this, you know, because love just makes things so much smoother, you know, when it's in your life. You know, it doesn't judge, you know, it's tolerant. You know, there's so many aspects to love that, you know, are very beneficial in life. And so I don't think they were supposed to be pushed so far away from us so that a lot of people don't even have them as an experience in their life. Their ability to feel is just so closed. And I'm not talking just on the level of emotion. I'm just talking about feeling. With a lot of people, when I work with them, we actually have to almost give them a heart. You know, they have no, you know, you can use love poems, you can do whatever you want, and it nothing stirs at all. So, you know, it's good now that, you know, people are speaking about it more, people have an awareness that there is this divine feminine energy at work, you know, in life now. It's always been there, it's just we hadn't given it, you know, conscious recognition, and now more and more people are aware and seeing, you know, how it works in life and how it can help to perhaps solve some of the seeming dilemmas we have right now.
I have three questions, but I'll start with one and be grateful that I can ask the one. Llewellyn distinguished between emotions and feelings, and I'm wondering, is there any way that you can articulate what the experience of the feminine or the appreciation of the feminine qualities of the divine would be in terms of understanding what it feels like and distinguishing what it is not in terms of emotion that might confuse us in our perception or yeah. recognition of it.
Yeah, because she isn't emotional at all. Um, And again, you know, we're actually looking for like attributes here. So compassion, mercy, wisdom, beauty, goodness. For me, they have more to do with the essential nature, whereas emotions, you're in envy, jealousy, rage, or deep affection. But, you know, your emotions, you can use them on your path. They can serve a purpose. Even anger can serve a purpose on the path. So for me, when I speak of feeling, I try to get more into, you know, attributes than, and it's easier for me. But, you know, when I speak of she, often I talk about the silence and the emptiness, the vastness. This quality of stillness and awake. I don't know if that answers your question, but
yes, it was very helpful. Are you able to share in any way what the other things present in the heart and the chest area besides, you mentioned something being in addition to the heart. Is there any way you can share any understanding or appreciation of what that part of us that we might discover would be like? Can you help us to understand them?
The centers is your soul. And it's sort of the idea that your soul is going to go on a journey. To the beloved or back to the source of God, but whatever, the return. And so it goes through all of these different stages and, you know, there's a lot of information. You have the idea of the commanding self and the reproachful self and the tranquil self and the contented self as your soul is journeying. And at times you can be in many of these different stages at the same time. So when you have light come into your soul through sitting in meditation or turning yourself towards the light divine or the eternal light, it helps your soul on its journey home. And for a long part of my unfoldment, I was always told to stay in the light, it's the way. So anytime I would be in meditation or an experience that I couldn't, it just seemed bleak or dark or no way am I going to be able to move with this or solve this. Always light. You know, I would remember the idea that if I can get light into this. And this, again, is sometimes where the male comes in, because sometimes reason and logic is the light that's necessary for the soul to con. So for me, you know, the male and the female always work together. Hopefully, most of the time for you, it'll be in concord and agreement. And so there'll be a harmony. But it isn't always so. Sometimes you can see that there's a huge conflict, you know. So that's one way. And then they go on. And those are the two, the heart and the soul are the two easiest ones to speak about. The rest, really, it's revealed to you what they are more. I mean, you can read other people's revelations that have come to them, you know, from the secret or the hidden or the most hidden. But Sufism is primarily the experience of all that we've been speaking about. So I think this is one of the reasons why I don't really give talks so much, is because I'm actually interested in you having a taste of what we've been speaking about. And usually when I do these conferences, you all have been days hearing everybody talk, so by the time you get to me, you're usually quite content just to sit in meditation and be quite quiet and still. But this particular conference, we're kind of, it's quite compact, and so the rest will be revealed to you, you know. But like I said, with the soul, they talk about it having stages and states and things like that, so on its journey home.
Can you just tell me how you came into the path? Was there any event in your life that brought you in?
Yes. I came to the path through the unseen. I had been studying something for about 17 years, a metaphysics. So my journey was primarily through truth. And there was this one, and I was working on the oneness of being and the unity of being in my studies. And there was this one particular sentence that always kind of confused me, and it was sort of the idea that you get taken to the highest earthly plane, and then the spirit of truth is going to have to come and guide you. And sort of the pointers I was given was to fear God and to obey the commandments if this particular spirit, you know, were to come upon me. And I just would look at it sometimes, and you know, this idea of fear God is this awe that Llewellyn was speaking about earlier. You know, it's not fear like being afraid or anything like that. It's just this tremendous awe that you have to have when the divine presence really starts to show up as grace in your life. So one night I decided that my brick wall was there, and I decided that I was going to take everything that I knew to be true, and I was going to put it in my heart, put it into love, and see what would happen, and that I was going to feel everything that I knew to be true. And in an instant, I was taken and undone and had an experience in the unseen where I was taught, and that's how I came to the path. So my guides, teachers, everything, all my information that I was given from the unseen. And after I was totally undone, then I was given a teacher in this reality to help me to reintegrate and to help me to really understand what had happened to me. So I came a little different way. It wasn't, you know, Sufism is usually a process just like anything else where everything slowly gets revealed to you, but it was a little different for me. Yeah, whoever.
I wonder if you could relate this feminine energy that you talk about in some way to the devastation that Llewellyn was talking about before, or does it relate?
They're one and the same. It's just love. It just totally wipes you out.
Because I had a dream a couple of years ago of a powerful tiger energy, which I was so terrified of that I put it in an envelope and mailed it to myself. My assumption being that it's going to come back sometime.
Hopefully it's coming soon.
I think it's coming back, and I'm just wondering what...
Open the envelope.
And what the experience... You know, I know the butterflies and the...
There's a lot of information around the tiger, to be in the tiger's mouth.
A lot of information?
Go digging for it.
In meditation?
Or, you know, there's other ways as well. There's actually... Well, I shouldn't give you too much information. You should, you know, around the tiger's mouth, being in the tiger's mouth.
Thank you.
It's not so much part of the Sufi tradition, though, as it's part of you know, they speak about it often, being in the tiger's mouth. I have no idea what time it is because they took my clock away, so. Oops.
You were saying you were undone, you were being undone.
I prefer the word dismantle, but when I use it, people really get freaked out.
Okay, when you got dismantled.
Yeah.
Do
you know what a mantle is? You know, you got to get real naked during this, so it's that kind of thing.
Did it happen like this, or it stretched on a long period of time?
It was like this, and then there was this. This is never ending. Any other questions? This was quick, huh? Usually I'm like, oh, when is this going to be over? There's a question right behind you.
I don't know if this is going to be a question, but during the meditation, my eyes were like little sprinklers, and drops of water fell down my cheeks and down my neck to my heart, which is very thirsty for truth. 2 weeks ago, I was with my father during his dying process, or his return home, as we say. And I was sitting at the... Excuse me?
Peace be with him.
Yes. Thank you. I was sitting at the end of his bed, and I looked up over at him, and he had his mouth open, and it was like this big cavern, empty cavern. And then I looked at his eyes, and there was nothing there. And he was still alive, but he must have been at death's door at that moment. I could feel it. And this fear arose within me, and I wanted to run out of the room. So instead, I said, I'm not going to do that. I went over to his bedside, and I took his hand, and I looked into those eyes. I looked into his mouth, and I saw a cave, and I thought of Christ, the birth of Christ, or the Word, would be present within that cave. And when I looked into his eyes, I saw there was more fear arising at that moment. And I just kept looking, although there was nothing there. And it seemed like an eternity. And when I kept looking, I heard his voice say, "What does this mean?" And I just, all of a sudden, his spirit returned to his body. And I don't know if it, do you think it's because I placed my attention on him?
Has your father passed away?
He has now.
Yeah.
Yes, a few days ago.
Yeah. I mean, his spirit never really leaves him. So I don't know if you meant that you seemingly thought that his spirit, was his spirit really ever in his body to begin with? You know, was the soul ever really in the body to begin with?
I don't know. It's a good question.
You know, this door, why couldn't it, instead of death's door, why couldn't it have been the beloved's door? You know, we have such a strange concept in the West, you know, about passing from our conditioning and, you know, instead of like, you know, hallelujah, you know, he's finally returning. And, you know, a lot of times it's referred to, you know, as, you know, more like, you know, their birth again instead of, or married, you know, the wedding, their reunion, you know, with the beloved, that kind of thing. So sometimes, you know, it can just be you've imposed your conditioning on your father's mm-hmm. condition, and mm-hmm. you just look and see that that's where you are, that's your concept around it, and you might want to think about, you know, if you're really seeking the truth around it, seeing that, you know, maybe you have some images there that you might want to clean up a bit.
Okay.
Because it was your father's passing.
Right.
You know, you were there maybe too much as subject and object instead of as witness, mm-hmm. you know.
Yes. Well, the fear drew me in.
Yeah.
When that came up. The fear drew me in, and then of the unknown, actually. Yeah.
So change fear to awe. Just yes. the awe of the mystery of how it all is, you know.
It was powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful. Yeah. I wouldn't have missed it for a moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Do we have time for one more?
If I could ask you to maybe reflect on something that awoke in became awake for me during Llewellyn's speech. There was sort of an awareness suddenly that the heart, instead of just being or radiating, sort of had a desire to turn, to sort of become like a dynamo. And is there a modality to sort of encourage, to sort of lessen the restriction on the turn? Pardon?
That's what it's all about. You turn your heart. That's what, and you know, sometimes people have it as a flip, actually, that it's like this and they do this. But for most people, it's, you know, in within the tradition of Rumi, they actually do turn. You know, they do. They're called the whirling dervishes. But since you've gotten the glimmer of what that is, you've have a taste or a, you know. Remember it and see when you go to sit in meditation, you know, it's as simple as I turn my attention towards my heart or some sort of word that has the idea of turn. You know, you can use whatever intention you wish to go into your heart. But one of the three things that I speak about is, you know, your sincere intention with whatever it is that you're going to do. Is the longing and the yearning there, and is the sorrow with it as well. So, you know, this turn is very important, and, you know, if you can sit. And it, you know, sometimes, did you feel like you were, it was like kind of being pulled?
There was a desire to really let it run.
Yeah, so, see. go. The heart's not restricted. Your mind is what's restricted. The heart is doesn't have a dimension, has no boundaries, it's limitless, you know, no direction or anything. Your mind has all of those things and conditions you to think that perhaps your heart is like that as well. Okay. Well, it was very nice sitting with all of you.